Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Secure Your Life, real talk about real issues. Today is Tough Talk Tuesday, and I want to welcome all of you all. This is a segment where real talk, real life, no holds barred discussion about the financial pitfalls that we have made, some mistakes that put us in some really bad situations, but this is your chance to rant and rave about what you feel is not going right with the economy, with your personal finances. This show is the show for you to talk about Tough Talk on a Tuesday, our regular night, but we have changed our format. But before we get any further, I'd like to give you all a chance to join us immediately in the chat room so that you all can get in on the conversation, and also give you the phone number so that you can call in, and I'll give you the topics right after I give you the phone number. The phone number is area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. But before we go any further, let me play our disclaimer.
Welcome to Secure Your Life. It is time for us to do a little housekeeping and give you our disclaimer. The views and opinions expressed on the show may not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the host, the sponsors, this station, and Paragon Productions. The content and or information that is referenced and referred to on this show is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. We encourage our listeners to seek direct consultation from qualified, licensed, and certified professionals. The purpose of the show is to provide you an open forum where one is free to express his or her opinion in a no-holds-barred discussion about money, personal finances, and business matters. Now, it is time for you to sit back and participate and enjoy the show. And once again, thank you for joining us for Secure Your Life.
Okay, well, now that we have taken care of a little housekeeping, let us talk a little bit about our topics that our viewers and listeners have wrote in. They gave us an email, and they decided that they wanted to talk about if I knew then what I know now in regards to student loans and credit cards. Then we're going to talk about, are we on the rebound? What's happening with the foreclosure woes? And then to conclude our show, we're going to talk about what to do about those daggone, nagging, begging relatives when helping them hurts you. So let's start off with the first topic about if I knew then what I know now about student loans and credit cards. I know that a lot of adults are drowning in debt as a result of what happened to them when they first got to college. And I know going back to my college days, when I first got there, and they've changed some things now for good reason, but when I first started college, after getting my classes and going into the bookstore, we were giving applications for credit cards. Now, this is amazing because when you are 18 years old, most of us didn't have a job or we only had a part-time job at best. And here you are, you get this, you get your books and you get an application for credit. Who knew? So a lot of my friends filled out the cards, was approved immediately. No job in sight. That's amazing. You're going to get a credit card and you don't have any means in which to pay. And a lot of us took out student loans as well as financial aid in order for us to be able to pay for school. So I know that a lot of my friends did what I consider the big cardinal no-no, which is banking on money that you don't have in your hand. So they decided that they were going to take out these lines of credit with the credit card. Initially, they told themselves, this is only going to be for emergency purposes only. And some parents even allowed their children to get credit cards that was only supposed to be for emergency purposes only. And how many of us really actually followed those rules? Did we really only use those credit cards as for emergency purposes? Or did you go with your friends on a little shopping spree after you bought your books, of course, and all the other essentials that you needed? Did you really use those credit cards only for emergency? Or did you just have to have that emergency pair of sneakers or heels or bracelets or clothes that you just had to have and that was your emergency? I know a lot of us have fallen victim of getting credit cards before we were ready and weren't even disciplined enough to understand what it is that we were supposed to be doing, and then banking on getting that student loan or the financial aid check to kind of pay for some things that we didn't really even need in the first place. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. For me, the biggest thing for me was my student loans. And, I mean, I know a lot of adults are still paying on their student loans for school, and they've been out of school for umpteen number of years, but those things still haunt you today. Unfortunately, a lot of us, that is a majority of our debt, and you're so swimming in the credit card debt from your early years as well as the student loan debt that you don't see a way in, a way out to be free from any of that. So if you're just now joining us, I would like to welcome you once again. You are listening to Secure Your Life, and our phone number is 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. Our chat room is also open. If you were a victim of drowning in school, student loan debt, and you're still an adult now, still trying to figure out how to pay that, or if you were a victim yourself of being a part of the credit card trap as a young person still going into college or whatever, we really would like to stop that phenomenon from happening to anybody else. A lot of that, the government has stepped in to try to alleviate them targeting students, of course, without a job or anything else like that. But we really would like to, I want to hear from you. What is your rant? Or what are your views on the situation with, if you knew then what you knew, what you know now about your student loans or your credit card debt? I'm going to go to area code 815 first, and then 312 you'll be next. And then anybody else, if you're in the chat room, feel free to put your comments and or questions, and I will gladly read those over the air. Area code 815, thank you for joining me.
Hello, Diamond. Good evening, and how are you?
I am doing fabulous tonight on our Tough Talk Tuesday. I'm pretty sure that if you have not been a victim of any of these circumstances, I'm pretty sure you know someone who make some really not so good decisions in regards to paying off their student loans or paying off those credit cards or getting credit cards before anyone sat down with them to tell you the responsibility of that. What is your views or your advice?
Okay, now I would like to pass on something that my dad, a piece of information, my dad gave to me. The first real job I had with a real company that was big enough to have a credit union. Now, this would cover, say, like, if I knew not then what I know now, I would not have done it. That would cover that. Well, I didn't do it mainly because I think it's some information a lot of people can use, and my dad passes on to me, and I followed his advice. Now, the first real job I had, was a real company, as I said before. They had a credit union. And
okay.
My dad informed me of this. He says, okay, because I wasn't even thinking about it at the time. My dad says to me, well, okay, this job, they have a credit union. It's a big company. He says, well, you're going to be meeting new friends on your job, and there's a good chance you're going to find yourself in a position where some of your new friends will try to get you to co-sign for them for a loan. So my dad says to me, do not co-sign for me. And this is my father now telling me not to co-sign for him.
Okay.
So, you know, if he's telling me not to co-sign for him, that means you don't co-sign for anybody.
Well, I will tell you what my dad said to me about that. He said, don't co-sign for Jesus.
Right.
So that goes a little bit deeper than what your father told you.
Right.
He told me co-signing is a complete no-no. Don't you co-sign for Jesus. And I think that if you take it to that extent, then that's serious. That is an absolute 100% do not do it. Do not have to go. You will not collect $200. So I took that and said, well, okay, well, if Dad says do not co-sign for Jesus, then that means an absolute no. I'm not co-signing for anybody.
Know that. Do not co-sign for anybody. Nobody. Nobody you co-sign for.
Well, okay, let me ask you this. I'm pretty sure that you've heard some really bad horror stories. Like I said, the first segment is If I Knew Then What I Know Now. What were some of the horror stories that you heard about people who did do the co-signing thing?
Well, not a co-signing situation. I had a co-worker that told me that she got the impression that the credit card people could not make her pay them. They can't make me pay them. But they made her wish
really?
She had paid them.
What happened with her in the credit card company?
It was one of those things where, you know, like she ran up a bill, and she was just thinking that she could just ignore them and they would go away. And they came after her with garnishments and all this other bad stuff.
Yeah, I mean, ignoring it does not work. It never works. That's just like if you know something is happening and you don't, just because you close your eyes does not mean that it goes away.
Well, you have, I guess she was thinking that the credit card people were like a boyfriend. You know, you close your eyes and he's not there anymore.
Okay, so that you can dump them just like you dump, yeah, well, you can't do that.
And then
here's another thing. It doesn't, even though you try to ignore it subconsciously, it is still bothering you. That debt does not go away. And people have to realize, I mean, a lot of people find themselves in situations that, of course, was out of their control. So we're not talking about those of you who fell victim of downsizing. And you had your financial plan together. You were paying your bills. So this does not apply to you. Those of you all who were victim of failed health, or, you know, if a relative, wife, spouse, child was a victim of failed health, and as a result of that, you find yourself in a financial situation. We are not talking about people like that. Those situations are, we're talking about the people who have abused their credit or just did not know what to do. Here it is, like you said, you're 18 years old, you just graduated from high school, fresh away from your parents, and the first thing they do at the bookstore is arm you with an application for what teenagers, because at that point you're still a teenager, you're thinking this is free plastic money. Oh, they're going to give me a line of credit for $500, I have no job. But they didn't even think about that. You know, I'm glad that the rules have slightly changed, and I do stress the slightly. But, I mean, it's just great to know that we at least armed with some great information that they didn't have when I was in college. And a lot of people got burned. You know, they're thinking that they can charge up with whatever. And like your coworker, they just thought that they were just the, you know, credit card people. They can't make me pay. They'll just go away. It never goes away. Just like ignoring your student loans, bad idea. That doesn't go away. At least with the credit card situation, if you're drowning in credit card debt, there are some things that you can do. But filing bankruptcy is an option for some people, if they're depending on how much debt you're in. But you will never run away from those student loans, because you cannot claim that on your bankruptcy. So you can run, but you can't hide, is the cliche in this situation. So I would like to take a second out, and for those of you who just joined us, I want to welcome you and thank you for listening to us on This is Secure Your Life Tough Talk Tuesday, where you get a chance to get your rant and rave on about what you dislike about politics, your financial situation, whether it was because of identity theft or someone else did something that you just did not like in regards to your finances and you are suffering as a result, or you know a story where someone else had that situation happen to them, then you have tuned into the right show. Our phone lines are open, as well as the chat room. And those of you all who are in the chat room, I will be with you in just a second. Just hold on slightly. Let me give the phone number real quick, and then I'll open up the phone lines also. You can call us at area code 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. It is all about your rant and rave today on Tough Talk Tuesday. We are talking about right now, if I knew then what I know now, regardless if it's about your student loans, your credit cards, co-signing for somebody, whatever it is, we want to hear from you. Our chat room is also open. I'm going to open up another phone line, so 815, hold on, let's add someone else to the conversation. Hello, area code 980, you are on with us. How are you?
Yeah, this is Thomas calling from Charlotte.
Hi, Thomas, how are you? What's your rant today?
I'll tell you why I'm mad, son. I'm tired of people that I speak to at work. They got money and they just complaining because they see interest rates as lower. Not that they can't afford to make their payment, but they feel in a sense of entitlement because they've been paying their mortgage. They say, well, you know, I've been a good customer for 5 years and I never made a payment. That's what the hell you're supposed to do. You act like, you know, that's just like you saying, I take care of my children. What you thought you was just going to leave them to be damned?
I hear you on that.
I mean, they, and then what's crazy is that, you know, they try to blame it on the people who are poor. The people who are abusing it the most are on the modifications are the people who are rich because they have money. They'll walk away from the house, and they're doing strategic foreclosures, right? And then the attorneys are telling them, you know, to go ahead and try to find another house and walk away from this house in a better area. So they come up with all kinds of elaborate schemes. I mean, they're usually people who make a lot of money. It's not so – the thing is that, you know, we'll let them buy another house provided that the current – like if they're underwater on their current house, as long as they're up to date on their mortgage and as long as they have enough income to carry both houses, we'll let them buy a second home as long as they got the down payment. That's what they're doing. They're buying another house, and then they're going to let the other house go into foreclosure. They're gonna buy buy another home that's a foreclosure, you know, buy that really low below market value, and then they let the other house go.
Oh, so that's what's going on now. Oh, well, I can understand why you got to rant on that. So, and then the people who really need those modifications can't get them because the other people are abusing them.
Oh, and here's the other dirty little secret, right? With the modifications is that. The modifications that are being done through Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, they impact someone's credit.
Oh.
Right? Because, yeah, so when you get it, sometimes it can be permanent. Like they might go down in your interest rate to 2%, and they might keep it there for a minimum of 5 years, and then in the 6th year, they'll go ahead and they'll raise it up another percentage point. So you got basically 6 years of reduced interest rate on a so what they do is they take you for the first 5 years, I think they do up to 2% for on a 40-year term, and then on the 6th year they'll do 3% on a 30-year, I believe. And then they'll go back to potentially the regular rate depending upon what the interest rates are doing at the time, but they can't go beyond what your original interest rate was, okay? So those people are getting, you know, a modification at the cost of impairing their credit. Now, the people who are, you know, the super rich are the people who had bigger loans, who had, like, the non-conforming loans.
Yeah.
Right? The ones who had the non-conforming loans to investors, they're not, their credit's not being impacted.
Also, okay, wait a minute. So you mean to tell me that this is a secret that basically the only good old boy network knows what's going on with that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. That is, yeah, that's a good rant. We should be outraged.
My manager got an investor-approved modification because he had a jumbo loan. He said it didn't affect his credit at all.
Oh, wow. Well, let's add a little bit, add some more people to this. If you're in the chat room, please let us know what your rant is today. This is Tough Talk Tuesday on Secure Your Life. If you knew then what you know now, what would you have done differently back when you were in college? You know, when you first got your first credit card, when you first took out your first student loan, and for those of us who are in graduate school, not only do you have your undergrad loan, you have your graduate school loan, and you have to probably have 15 job mon just to pay off just your student loans. We're not even talking about living expenses. I'm pretty sure that those people out there who want to rant and rave about that, we can talk about it. The phone number is 347-884-9343. Again, the phone number is 347-884-9343. It is Tough Talk Tuesday. Those of you in the chat room, if you have something that you want me to say over the air, I will be gladly to take your rant. And let us add one more person who has been diligently waiting patiently. Area code 312, what's your rant?
Good evening, Diamond. How are you this evening?
I am doing great.
Well, my rant this evening is about attorneys. Preferably real estate bankruptcy attorneys. We were in foreclosure.
Sounds like a big rant.
Oh, this is a hot one. Husband serving our wonderful country, and I am here making sure that the bills are paid. Unfortunately, I wind up getting sick and have to go on medical leave. His paycheck, because he's overseas, is not what it used to be.
Okay.
We are all a military paycheck. House comes into foreclosure. Unfortunately, there was really no way that we could stop it. So we thought we had a really nice attorney who was going to work with us to try to see if we could save the house.
Okay.
We wound up going to bankruptcy court.
So you filed a Chapter 13.
Come to find out, we found out that our attorney was in bed with our mortgage company because the mortgage company wanted the house. So
uh-oh.
When we went to court, he's sitting there going, well, they can't, oh, well, according to the paperwork, well, you know, they're going to have trouble making a modified payment. So they can only make $800 to $900 worth of payments every month because he's in the military and you know how that is.
Well,
we have paid this man. Right. We have paid our attorney over $2,000 to $3,000 to represent us. Notice the key phrase here is us. He sells us out to the mortgage company, and then when we go downstairs, because technically we've really lost the house, he and we're all going down in the elevator together, and he's acting like these two have a play date for sushi later on, and they're busy talking. Could you at least wait till you left us in order to have a chit-chat with him?
Oh, well, you know what? You have a great rant. Well, I want to ask the rest of our audience, if you just joined us again, this is Tough Talk Tuesday, and you get a chance to rant and rave about things that you do not like. So this is a no-holds-bar conversation about the financial pitfalls of bad decisions that were made and how to fix them. It is about facing the facts and telling the truth. So if you want to let us know what makes you hot? What got you hot in the collar and your panties in a bunch about our financial situation, whether it's politics, our country as a whole financially, or your own personal rant? Give us a call at 347-884-9343. Again, that is area code 347-884-9343. And remember that our chat room is also open, so if you don't want to call in, you can chat in, and I will read that over the air. But I think before we go on, I want to take a little comedy break. Is that all right with you all?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Definitely.
Well, I'm going to play something that's really, really funny. I think that we can all use a little laugh while we're ranting and raving. So hold on tight for our comedy break.
I've had it with all the Republicans. I've had it with Democrats, too. The President, Congress, and talking heads, they none of them know what to do. But I've got a simple solution for our screwed-up economy. These bailouts and buyouts and stimulus packages, just give the money to me. Just give the money to me, you bums. It'll work out, wait and see. No way I can do any worse than you. Just give the money to me. First thing I'll do is I'll pay off every mortgage and credit card. The banks still get bailouts, but now so do we. There now, was that so hard? And everyone gets health insurance. Your medical care is in place. If you lose your job or need pricey drugs or Dick Cheney shoots you in the face, just give the money to me, you clowns. I'm slightly more honest than thee. You've had your shot, now here's more cash. Not, just give the money to me. We'll bring back the factories and help desks from wherever the hell they all went. And companies can either employ people here or we'll tax them 10,000%. They'll have to stop all their polluting from every pipe, chimney, and vent. And those who refuse can just breathe their own fumes. I hope they've got a lemon fresh scent. Just give the money to me, you fools. Deposit it directly. This way it should do somebody some good. Just give the money to me. Imagine a world without money, where no one's in desperate need, where food, shelter, and entertainment aren't subject to somebody's greed. I hope that someday we can get there. Till then, I know better than you. And if I should empty a Best Buy or three, consider it only my due. Just give the money to me, you rubes. I'll salvage our economy. I might take some perks, but hey, whatever works. Just give the money to me, oh. Just give the money to me, you bums. I'll prove to you freedom ain't free. No way I can do any worse than you. Just give the money to me. No way I can do much worse than you. Just give the money to me.
All right, we are back. I agree with him. What about you? I think the government should have given us that money. Let us pay our own bill instead of bailing them out. What are your views? Mm-hmm.
I agree. Pay the money.
Okay, 312, could you repeat that? I didn't catch that.
Well, I
said you got to start somewhere.
I definitely agree with you. Okay, and Thomas, what are your views on that? Do you think that the government should have just given the American public the bailout?
I mean, it's a complex question. Because if we had just given the money to the people, we don't know what the other side of that would have been. Because that whole thing with AIG, it is a lot more complicated than people knew about. And there's a lot of details that the public didn't really get the full gist of. I think one of the best depictions of what happened during that situation was, if you look at Wall Street 2,
okay,
Money Never Sleeps, they actually do a fairly decent job of describing what happened and some of the decision-making process that made into, because, you know, once they let Lehman fail, because potentially this is what could have happened, okay? At the point when Merrill Lynch was getting ready to flounder, Merrill Lynch is a huge, huge market maker, okay? And a market maker is someone who basically provides liquidity in the stock market. So there's buyers, there's sellers, and so there's always someone on the other side of that making sure there's money available so that when a trade is executed, you actually have someone to kind of back up that trade. And basically, in order for you to have a value of anything, you have to have a buyer and seller. Right, a meeting of the minds in order to make
right.
a sale. Right, supply and demand. Now, what would have happened had Merrill Lynch failed? All asset values could have went to zero. So that's when the scene. Yeah, so that would be very bad. So if all asset values go to zero, you got problems.
We have big problems.
Yeah, so that's why when Paulie Gasparino said on CNBC, he said that if the Fed chairman didn't have a gun to Ken Lewis's head, he should have, literally. Because if they let it fail, it'd have been really, really bad. Now, the thing with AIG definitely was was a scam, but unfortunately they literally had the gun to our head on that one, because all those derivatives and all of those different complex financial instruments, there's so much leverage that was out in the system that it really, they basically were playing casino with other people's money, with pension fund monies, with mutual fund money. And that's what's funny about it, is like they're using other people's money and they're getting these huge bonuses. Now, with AIG, the biggest scam that took place was the fact that AIG paid out 100 cents on the dollar to Goldman Sachs, who was a counterparty on the credit default swaps. So they got, so basically what Goldman Sachs does is they completely hedge themselves. They make sure that on any position that they have insurance on it. So these are the things that they don't teach you, that, you know, you don't have to lose a lot of money in the stock market. There's actually ways that, you know, you can protect yourself on a trade where you can guarantee to lose no more than 6% on any trade. If you know the type of instruments that are out there that protect yourself, they don't tell you about it, but there's actually insurance that you can buy on certain investments. And that's what
they
did on the credit
swap. Let me ask you this, so that the common person, the everyday worker who absolutely knows nothing about stock, trading, mortgages, none of that, if you were trying to make that simple stupid, how best would you describe
it's really not that simple. I mean, it's something that it takes years of study. It really does. I mean, you have to really understand how it's not something. I mean, unfortunately, in this country, we want everything to be simple, and it's not. It's really not. It's no way. Like Warren Buffett, for instance, he says that he does what he does, and he doesn't use any complex mathematics or anything like that, which is probably true. Like when he buys a company, he looks at it from the standpoint of buying the whole company, but some of the other things that are out there that can be used as ways to, you know, protect yourself, those things are a little bit more complicated, like option contracts and stuff like that, futures contracts. Those things are a lot more complicated, and you have to understand how they work in order to make them work for you. So you have to have a firm foundation to understand how stock prices work and how and why the markets work, and then from there you can get to the more sophisticated stuff to protect yourself, to shield yourself from Armageddon. You know?
Let me go back and say what is happening to a lot of families. Let's just go back to the mortgages and the foreclosures, something that is a little bit tangible for us to kind of wrap our hands around or grip our teeth in. Are the foreclosure situation, are we really rebounding from that, or is it just smoke and mirrors? Are there real modifications really going on, or is it just a farce?
They're happening, just not at the pace that, I mean, just I'll give you an example. Like if someone calls in about a modification, chances are they're going to be, you know, transferred 8 times, you know, they're going, now part of it is, they could make it a lot easier, but they're not trying to make it easier. I mean, most of the time, the smaller banks are actually doing a better job. The larger banks, you know, your big four banks is a more difficult process just because of the size of their monstrosities, and, you know, it's unfortunate, but you call in, you know, you might call in one number, and they transfer you here, they transfer you there. Part of it is that the protocol, like, they're supposed to transfer you to see if you can refi first. Now, because of the way mortgage banking works, if someone calls in and they're behind on their mortgage, right, obviously, you know, they can't refinance. But because the mortgage rules say that if the person's not on the other end, is like, say, for instance, does loan servicing, they're not licensed to do loans. So, therefore, they don't know underwriting guidelines. It's actually illegal to discourage someone from applying for a mortgage. Now, what will happen is, you know, they'll call in and then they'll transfer them to a loan officer. Loan officer speaks to them. Well, you know, I'm looking at your account and, you know, it appears that there are some lates. Is that accurate? and the person say yes and say, you know, I can't, then basically I have to say, I mean, I'm an underwriter, but based on, you know, what I see here, you know, we don't have a product that will be able to assist you, you know, for a refinance. You're always free to apply, but it's a $450 non-refundable application fee. You know, so that basically
Wait a minute, repeat that?
Is it basically if you want to apply because you can't, per RESPA, you can't discourage an application. So basically, you know, you tell the person it's a $450, you know, non-refundable application fee. And if they should want to apply, they can do so. But, you know, based on your what you've seen, this is not a scenario that's usually approved through underwriting. So at that point, it lets them know that, you know what, I really don't got no money to waste. So say so then you give them the second option, you know, I can transfer you to the customer service department and see if they can help you with some form of modification or something like that. But what ends up happening is people just get transferred all over the place because – you know, A, the phone systems are definitely not set up to make the process easier for you. Like, it should automatically flag you. They can do this. If they see a late on the account, it shouldn't even be referred to a loan officer. It should be staying straight there with someone there at the, you know, the customer service and then try to get them into home retention or something or Hope Now or something like that. So they're happening. They're just not happening at a very robust pace. I think the last time I checked, out of the 3 million, because, I mean, I was looking at CNBC today. They were talking about today, you know, real estate, you know, they haven't finished going down because there's still a whole lot of foreclosures that they haven't released on the market. Like, what they – see, this is what they've been trying to do, okay? And this is the calculus behind the Federal Reserve buying mortgage-backed securities. They're trying to let the banks earn their way out of this, okay? What I mean is that they're basically trying to have the banks make enough money by charging more on other services in some cases and consolidating their power. You know, smaller banks are being forced out of business and allowing the bigger banks to take bigger market share, right?
Right.
And then what's going to happen is by allowing the bigger banks to earn their way out of it, they don't have to take over as many mortgages, because the federal government would end up being held with all the mortgages, right? And then, you know, that way the book value of the asset being the mortgage won't be reduced. So their hope is that if they could just hold off on these foreclosures, it won't bring down the property values too much, and hopefully the unemployment will improve. Because one of the things that affects home prices is unemployment. So what a lot of people got used to was this inflated environment of home prices going up year after year. The reason home prices went up from 2000, if you really want to look at 2001 to 2007, 2008, was because they had all these exotic mortgage products that allowed people to buy homes that really should not have bought homes, okay? And what happens is that true appreciation on home prices comes from natural inflation, right, based on wages. Now, the middle class has been stagnated ever since about 2000, 2001. When Clinton left off, the Bush administration already saw that. They saw that, you know, real income had not gone up, right?
Right.
So because of that, that's why Wall Street, they came with all these products to get people to buy houses, and that's the reason it was on such a wild trajectory that it was. If you had nothing but, if like, say, for instance, if all the loans had been done with full documentation, with, you know, traditional forms of asset verification and all the normal things that are required, you wouldn't have seen a run-up like you did, like in Phoenix, where you go buy a house and 6 months later you sell it for $80,000 more than you built it for. You wouldn't have seen that.
Oh, I see.
You'd have maybe about 5 to 10% a year on average across the country. And then the crash, if it wasn't going to be a crash, it wouldn't have been as catastrophic as it was. But once again, Wall Street got greedy. They made up these liar loans and all these other types of loans, and I have one question
for you that someone just texted me, and they want to know. They said that they lost their home in foreclosure, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The debt on it was $150,000, but now the bank is listing their home for $40,000, and they want to know, can they buy it back at the listed price?
I mean, potentially they possibly could. It just depends on the state. That's one of those situations. It just depends on the state law because, you know, technically in some states, reconveyance is not allowed. Meaning, like, if you lost your house, you know, that technically they won't let you go back and buy it because that mortgage debt that, you know, whatever you owe and they're selling it for $40,000. Technically, you know, and some, it used to be that used to be put as a 1099. They used to penalize you because it was the debt forgiveness or something like that, and they would hit you on your tax return. So you may want to talk with an attorney in your state to find out about that, because every state, unfortunately, is different. You know, every state is vastly different, actually.
Okay.
That
you did answer the question. I will make sure that I let them know that they definitely need to seek counsel on that issue. To, you know, we want to make sure that we keep our people legal. I have this one last topic that we're supposed to talk about in the last 15 minutes of our show. And what do you do about those daggone relatives that keep begging and asking for money? That was somebody else's rant. They said that helping them has hurt our family, and we understand that charity begins at home, but what do you do about those nagging relatives? Say no.
Basically what you have to do with those people who constantly ask for money is just have that conversation with them that, look, you know, as much as you would like to help them, it's stopping you from doing things that you need to do for your own family. So, you know, with family and everything, but at the end of the day, they have to take responsibility for whatever they got going on. You know what I mean? Because some people I've never done for anyone, I've never co-signed. I don't believe in that. That means if you need a co-sign, that means it's not your time to get it.
I agree.
That's really all it means. That's really, I mean, when you really strip it down, those elements, that's really what it's saying, is that you are not in a position to take on this responsibility, this debt. So therefore, if you're not ready, that means you need to. Now, what I'll do is I'll educate people. I'll tell people exactly what they need to do so they can get in a position. But people don't want to make a sacrifice sometimes. You know, like when I first got credit, you know, luckily when I went to college, my parents never had credit. So when I first got my first credit card, I treated it like gold. I ran up to help my cousin because he got in some trouble, and I took the cash advance on it, but I ended up paying it off in a timely fashion so I didn't get stung with late fees and all that stuff and get tricked into a whole lot of nonsense.
Right. But, in other words, that was one of those, if I knew then what I know now, you would not have done that.
Man, I can't say that. I know, because he's like I said, my cousin, he's fairly responsible, but he got himself into and he's a couple years older than I am, so and we're real close, so I didn't have a problem doing it. Like I said, I had the money to pay it off because it was only $500, so luckily I had the money. But in any event, you know, long story short, typically, you know, what I tell people is like, look, if you're looking to get credit, here's what you need to do. I tell everyone, you know, go get start off with a secure line of credit from the bank. Go to a bank. Don't go to a finance company. Get some installment debt. You know, pay on it for a little while, and then you'll be able to get credit. If you get about seven to 8 months under your belt, you'll be able to get what you want. More likely, you won't be able to get the best interest rate on the car, but at least they see that you've tried and you've established yourself. But sometimes people just don't want to make that sacrifice. They want what they want when they want it. And all they look at you is they look at the result. They don't look at what it took for you to get what you got. You know?
Oh, that is definitely correct. Here's the thing. The other person who, the one who said that they got the begging relative, their wife is giving the money to her family. He says, my wife is constantly letting her family borrow money from us, and I have seen our savings dwindle.
Oh, you got to put a stop to that.
Yeah, that's what I said, too.
See, Diamond?
If you have to do some fasting, I mean, you know your wife better than I do, but ain't no way in hell.
See, Diamond?
What's your comment, 815?
Here's the thing. Quite often in relationships, if people should sit down and talk about who they are, how to get along, what it's like with their family before the relationship gets serious. And if, like this man and his wife, now, if this man had really sit down and talked to the lady before he married her, she might have told him that, hey, I'm from a very close knit family. We stand
mm-hmm.
by each other. If one
mm-hmm.
person, if one family member has something, everybody in the family has part of it. If some relative is in trouble, everybody in the family pitches in and helps him out. Well, if this man, he stops me and he really investigates the family further, he will find that in most cases there is nobody in that family that has two dimes to rub together. And the
mm-hmm.
family members that do have something, they don't associate with them.
Now, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. There's a young lady that I'm still friends with to this day, but that was the very thing that kept me from, you know, because she talked because the way she thought, you know, her family going to be there when her man ain't right now. She is miserable right now because her mother, this girl from the time she was 19, she graduated, she went and became an RN. She was an LPN, then she went and got RN. She makes a ton of money. She does well for herself. She went and bought a mobile home for her mother in South Carolina. She's from South Carolina, so that's what they do down there. But, you know, she went and did it just for her mother, and the mother was supposed to, like, take over the payments with the, you know, with her boyfriend, whatever. Never happened. And I can just only imagine the strife we would have went through because I wouldn't have been having it. I'd been like, hell no.
Exactly.
You know, and it wouldn't have went down. So that's the main, and he's absolutely right. Like, I find out about, you know, people's relationship with their families, and, like, there's some people that are like that they owe their family something. And, you know, at the end of the day, I mean, if someone gives you some support, like someone gives you a ride here and there, okay, fine. You know, you want to pay them back, okay, you know, you want monetary compensation here. I'm the type of person, you want that, that's what really what you want? Okay, I give you $400, don't ever ask me for anything again. But, you know, but unfortunately, like, there's some people who have that feeling like, you know, they owe someone something and that, you know, whatever they do, any form of success that they have, that they have to give it back. And you don't have to. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, person has to be responsible for what it is that they have going on in their life. I mean, just like my situation, for instance, right now, my situation is a little more complex, but, like, when I bought my house, I bought a house 3 years ago, and I was working for a company that got bought out by another company. Now, I got a loan through that very company, right, that did the buyout, and then they laid me off 2 months afterwards.
Wow.
So you heard me say? So
yeah.
I bought that. Now, the thing is, I went through their loan process. They knew that they were going to be shutting us down, and they still gave me the loan. Now, I could probably go and sue because there's no way that you could tell me that, you know, when you have this kind of – because these are two large companies that merged. So there's no way you could say that, you know, there was no way that they'd known that they were going to be laying – because they usually – when they were doing a merger and acquisition, they already know what percentage of the workforce they're going to lay off probably about at least 120 days before it happens.
Right.
Because they plan these things out pretty strategically. So, you know, I literally was out of work for a year. Now, everyone's wondering, like, wow, how do you still got these houses? And I was like, luckily I had savings. You know, and when I went back to work, I was able to maintain. I had, you know, another piece of property and stuff. So I was able to maintain. Now, you know, when I went, now, this was the funny thing about how family is. So just like he said, you know, family, you know, they always want to be in your pockets and everything. Now, when it was found out that I lost my job, one of my uncles called. Now, he wanted one of his kids to come stay with me because he just graduated from school. Now, he didn't call to see how I was doing. He called because, you know, I got laid off. He didn't say, oh, you need help or anything. He just said, hey, I heard you lost your job. Misery loves company. So rather than him calling to check on my well-being, he called to check to see why I lost my job. You're a valuable employee. They can't. I was like, I'm a peon in that company.
Right.
You know, it doesn't matter. And people don't understand corporate politics. I'm a peon. So, you know, that's what's saying. So that's why I don't feel like I ever owe anyone anything. The only person that if I really needed something that I would ever feel comfortable going to is my father. And, you know, I still would have a hard time going because I haven't lived with my parents in over 18 years. I'm 35. So, you know, if I did ask him for something, he going to hurt somebody to try to get it if he ain't got it. Because, you know, if I ask for it, that must mean I really need it. So I wouldn't even ask him because if he don't got it, it's a problem. So he's probably going to get up off of it.
Right.
Because I don't ask for anything, you know. So that's why I don't feel
I'm the interesting. What the interesting thing is that family, you do, to a certain extent, do need to be able to at least know that if there was a crisis that you could, not that you would, but that you could ask and then someone would be there. But then there are some trifling relatives, and I think every family has it, where you only see them and they always have their hand out. So the thing is, learn to say no. And the one whose wife, unfortunately, you're going to have to start making some really hard decisions on, because that is obviously affecting you know, your marriage as well as your finances. And you need to get a handle on that. But we have only 3 minutes left, guys. This was fun for Tough Talk Tuesday, getting our rant and rave on about what you did not like. And let's do a recap real quick. We talked about if I knew then what I know now and how you would have changed that. We also talked about the foreclosure woes. Are we really on a rebound or is it just smoke and mirrors? And what to do about those daggone trifling begging relatives and how to get them out of your pocket, because charity does start at home. And I want to leave you all with at least this. Make sure that you pay yourself first. Just like it is, you are a bill, pay yourself at least 10% of your earnings. Put that aside. Before you pay anything else, you got to pay your bills, but you got to pay you. You got to create some type of safety net, some kind of savings. And we'll talk more about how to, Thomas was talking about getting a secured line of credit. We'll go into that on another show on how to set that up and making your financial institution, being your bank or credit union, you need to talk to somebody that can be your personal finance person, whether it's at a credit union, a bank, or something, and what and why they are so important to you. You need to get with that and make sure, please, if you do nothing else, if you don't take anything else away from this show, make sure you pay yourself first. That is so vitally important. But I want to thank you all. All of you all for joining me for Tough Talk Tuesday. We're going to do this again next Tuesday, but join me tomorrow because Secure Your Life is on all week long this week. And tomorrow we're going to talk about business in the making. For those of you all who are in business for yourselves or would like to start a business, you definitely want to tune in tomorrow for that show. And don't forget also that we are still doing our book club, and our book club book is Rich is a State of Mind, and I have a couple of copies that I can give away. So if you'd like to have a copy of the book and join us on the book club, please go and email me at sylshow@att.net. So that is sylshow@att.net, and I will gladly send you a copy of Rich is a State of Mind so you can join us for our book club. Thank you all for joining me. Thank everybody that's in the chat room as well as the ones who called in, and I will talk to you all tomorrow. Have a good evening.
Good night, Diamond.
Good night.
Good night.